Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Channeling the giants of classic rock with her powerhouse vocals and distinctive eye-catching style, rising American-based rocker and fashion maven Miss Velvet is taking the rock and roll world by storm. Dubbed the Underground Velvet by LA Weekly, and now entering a new era of visibility and self, Miss Velvet's debut solo album was titled Traveler. After moving from her native New York City to sunny Los Angeles, Miss Velvet connected with acclaimed rock producer S.J. Jones. The duo sparked a deep connection and explored themes of conditional and unconditional love, loss, and sex, with a distinct focus on their shared love of classic rock music. No stranger to the stage, in recent years, Miss Velvet has toured and performed in over 100 cities across 5 continents, including opening 2 world tours for the iconic George Clinton, who calls her voice the definition of rock and roll. George Clinton isn't the only one singing Miss Velvet's praises, with numerous music critics comparing her bold vocals and electrifying performances to the likes of Mick Jagger, Janis Joplin, and Robert Plant. Additionally, her previous releases with her band Miss Velvet and the Blue Wolf have garnered 2 top 20 hits on the Billboard mainstream rock chart. Miss Velvet's presence is also felt heavily online, where she has built a passionate and engaged following on social media, with hundreds of thousands of followers dialed into her daily posts. As described by the illustrious publication American Songwriter, Miss Velvet, a pseudonym for boundless artistic expression, brings us back to the golden era of classic rock. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Miss Velvet. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
So I'm doing wonderful, Barrett. Thank you for having me. I am out in California and I am tapping in from Malibu, up in Point Doom. So drastic difference between living in New York City my whole life and coming out here the past 2.5 years.
So we're going to dive into that in a moment. But first of all, why and where does the name Miss Velvet come from?
Loaded question. He's not messing around. Let me back it up a minute. So I think over 6 years ago, I came out to California and I was working with Nick Littlemore from Empire of the Sun. So the writing duo Empire of the Sun. And I ended up doing a couple tracks with him and we were doing some really cool stuff for Cirque du Soleil when he was hired to do the soundtrack of that. And I did a bunch of vocals on stuff for him. He was doing some stuff for Elton John. So we were finding this really cool rhythm and flow and just experimenting as a young artist. And I love him and an amazing human. So we were talking a little bit about the next direction of myself and what we thought. And he was like, are you really going to use your real name? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, I just feel like there's so much depth in where you go, where there's almost a fantasy element to it. Mm. And it's the way he's like, the way I've seen you perform on stage, you're not this, you're entering into some other alter ego. And I said, no, you're right. And he goes, I feel like we could come up with a name together. And so we kind of, he was really this person that introduced me to all of these kind of older films, like John Cassavetes films. And one of them, I think we ended up loving, not Cassavetes, but a film called Blue Velvet. And the more him and I were kind of diving into that world, he was like, I love that name. I love that name Velvet. And I was like, I love that name too. And then I remember going home to the hotel and I was staying at the Sunset Towers and the whole thing felt very film. The whole thing felt like I was in a movie.
Yeah.
And I remember texting him and I remember being like, what about Miss Velvet? He was like, I love it. Let's put that in front of 100%. And so that was kind of the beginning of this fantastical alter ego ride. And of course, coming from someone like Empire of the Sun, it was amazing to kind of explore that narrative with him. So that was kind of the first foray into having a name that became an alter ego. And then now that's taken on many shapes and forms.
You sort of reference sort of the journey, but let's go backwards, all the way back. So as a child or as a teenager, at what point do you think, cool, I want to be in this creative music world, creating and production or entertainment space? And how did that journey progress to where we are now?
So as a little kid, my mom was in film, and she was also a writer. She was a librettist for operas.
Okay.
And so I remember growing up with her constantly listening to classical music and listening to the compositions her and this composer were working on together. And she was the librettist. She was writing these lyrics. And I remember she was also heavily into Broadway, and she had done a couple productions. And so I remember my sister and I always going backstage and doing our homework backstage and watching all of these like amazing humans kind of come off stage. They were dancers, they were naked. It was like this whole wild world behind the curtain. And then they would go on stage and then it would all come together. And I thought the dichotomy between something so raw and visceral, these humans before they would go out and then change. Like everything changed on stage and show business and showmanship. And I literally instantly, I remember as a kid being like, I want to do that. I want to do that. You know, my mom was super strict and like, okay, you want to do that? We're going to every music camp. I remember going to Interlochen music and arts camp out in Michigan for 4 summers. I remember doing the classical opera program there. I was in every choir in school, theater, dance. I mean, it was endless. And I remember at times kind of questioning, like, this is a lot of work. Like, this is a lot. But I think those kind of things stay with you for life, like technical things stay with you for life. And I've had incredible teachers over the span of 15 years and going to programs in Europe and Chiari, Italy, being accepted for this arts program for singers and young artists. And I just remember everything was kind of an exploration of how do I want it to amalgamation of like, how do I now want to take all these different teachers and songs and expressions and kind of make it my own thing. It was interesting going to these classical programs. I remember the teachers being like, there's a rasp in your voice when you get to the high notes. You're like, you should sing rock. And I remember that kind of being, because I had just grown up so much hearing classical music and hearing Broadway. And I remember getting to those bigger notes and belting and like some of these amazing teachers being like, there's a rasp in there. We need to explore that. And then that became my own exploration in New York. And that's another segue.
Okay, so when you were doing all these camps and all these schools and you referenced that, you thought, wow, this is a lot. Was there a point where you were like, oh, no, this is enough. I don't want to go there. Or was it just, okay, let's just keep pushing. Let's just keep pushing.
I think there was always that inner like hamster wheel drive that never stopped. And I feel like I'm lucky to say my mom noticed something. And there are going to be times when you're like, I'm tired. I don't want to do that. That's every kid. But I think it's a beautiful thing when a parent can see something in their child and then they're risking everything. They're sacrificing a lot to be able to give that child the best opportunity. But also it's like everybody, there's a lot of people with talent. And I think work ethic is a great, great fucking equalizer.
Yeah,
I think that at the end of the day is like, the talent and the work ethic are hand in hand.
Exactly.
100%.
And that working discipline, working hard, gives you foundation so that when things happen, it also sort of grounds you at the same time because you've worked so hard.
I love that.
So I'm speaking to you and myself because I'm like in that phase. I'm like working really hard, doing the interviews. And it's like, sometimes like, but then when it happens and it is happening, then I'll be like, okay, well, ground me, you know, because I think a lot of people, when they like just happens overnight, what we perceive as overnight in them, all of a sudden they can't get that grounding. They find it difficult.
100 I love that. What you said, I feel like you just fucking crystallized that. And it's like, there is such an element of wanting to be successful and like questioning everything along the ride of being like, is this the right path? Is this the right path? And I think that grounding, just when you're deep in the rabbit hole of anything, knowing that, hey, when I come up for air, I have these almost like techniques and things that I've learned along the way that are in my backpack of tools. I know how to address these things. I know how to get to that grounding state and then make really, really great executive decisions like in real time. Barrett, don't stop.
Yes, we're helping each other. Yeah, I'm processing as you're talking. I love this. I love this conversation.
Me too.
Quick next steps. So you mentioned what happened in New York, and you mentioned you've been in LA or California now for 2.5 years. So what was the segue in New York?
I think post kind of middle pandemic was the eye-opening, all-encompassing, uncomfortable, shocking moment of truth.
Absolutely.
I was coming off of 150 world tour with George Clinton. So it was full on and intense and beautiful and magnificent. And I think the reality of not going back out on the road and everything drastically changing was just, I couldn't compute that. Like, I remember turning to my partner and being like, no, we're in March, like give it a month. And he was like, no one's going out on the road again. Like, things are going to change, my love, like drastically change. Yeah. And I think, you know, there were things already with my band. Some of them I knew for 10 years. Some of them I worked with for 15 years and 7 years. And I think it really showed us with human nature and everything, when things get magnified, what did everyone really want in that band? Yeah. You know, some of them wanted families and some of them didn't want to continue with after they had families. And some of them just wanted to stay on the road and not let kind of this thing that's bigger than us unfold. And I think when there was a lot of, you know, grown-up decisions that needed to be made. And I think it was really the catalyst for me. I wanted to come out to California for such a long time. I wanted to explore the different elements of what Miss Velvet could become and working with other amazing human beings. And so I think it was like I always feel like the universe, when you really tap in, it knows. It's like time to grow.
Yeah.
Time to move on.
Yeah.
Like time to do things in a beautiful and respectful way. But it's time. It's time.
Yeah. And sometimes it kicks us up the ass to do it quick, a little bit quicker.
It kicks us in the ass. And I feel like going back to your amazing thing that you crystallized earlier about the grounding part of the what we call a journey, even. Yes. I think that was so important. Was like, when that happened, when the pandemic happened, it was like some artists and people got really calm and they were like, okay, we're gonna change everything. We can have orchestras on Zoom, like concerts on Zoom. Like we can literally change the narrative. It's like the wild fucking west in the music industry. And I feel like the people that embraced that understood the bigger messaging behind what was really happening.
Exactly. And also picking up new skills. Because I remember Kylie Minogue, I remember she was busy recording an album and went into pandemic and she didn't want to stop. So she learned all the engineering stuff and technical things so she could carry on by herself. And now she's picked that up that when she's recording new songs, she does it in a hotel room because she knows
it's
all these
so
new
badass.
techniques.
It's so badass.
Yeah.
I think that the artistry that actually came out of that and again got magnified, like
yeah.
if this is what you and I think even for determination aspects, like if this is what you really want and this is the career you really want, so the world is asking you to take a 2-year hiatus.
Yeah.
How the fuck are you navigating that?
Yes.
Like, and I think that was just mind-boggling in the most cool way. So yes, coming out to Cali happened with that, and I got pregnant, and I think that was also a big mind shift as well in how to address that now and be a mother and be a rock star. And then I got pregnant again.
Okay.
I came out here, so it's a double whammy.
What's the age difference between the kids?
So they're 16 months apart.
Oh,
they're literally
okay.
Irish twin, back to back, my friend.
Well, they say sometimes it's better to do like that than you can just get it over and done with.
I know. But what was so, I think, again, eye-opening was that just made my craft deeper. It made the lyrics deeper. It made the melody stronger. It really, I think there's, as a mother and what I'm finding too with the Velvets, as I call them, is like, there are these mothers that DM me, that write me, we're in like full blown paragraphs back and forth. And they're like, there's this weird transition period from like the late 20s into the 30s. And then you add a kid into that. And then you add your career into that. And I think that's been something that's been so cool now to tie in my partner SJ is like, she's this woman that came and lived with me and saw this dynamic of like me as a mother, me boss babying it, like with my record label, my two children. She's like, her and I looked at each other, we're like, let's write about this. Let's just fucking own what's happening right now as this 30-year-old, like understanding that how many other women and moms are going through this and how badass it is. And so I think that's what was so cool for this debut solo record, you know, having my wing girl come and live with me and see this in real time. I think that's what comes across on the Traveler record is like, it's endless. The possibilities. And that's a line in Traveler that we do not have to stop our life. You know, I have two kids and my life is even more encompassing and full and fuller. And I feel like the times that I have little breaks and the way I've learned how to like navigate that as a mom, I feel like has made me even stronger in my career. So I think that was definitely something in New York with my old team that scared the shit out of them is like, how are you going to do that kind of attitude?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's just what's so, like, that's what I mean about the Wild West in music and in the music industry right now is like, and what? Like, why? Why would I have to stop?
Exactly.
Look at fucking Rihanna pregnant at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And what?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I mean, look at Pink as well as another example. It's
so
still like these
cool
old school labels from the 50s and 40s and 50s that, oh, this means this, which means that you're in this box, which means you can't do this, which is all a load of
exactly
nonsense.
And now it's like the whole like in a box. I'm like, first of all the stereotypes. And I mean, even the people on my new team that are men on my team, it's like they have such a great outlook. They have such a fresh outlook. And I think that's what's so important is like, I told myself coming out here, I was like, I'm going to surround myself with like-minded individuals that understand that like, we can make a dent this way. And if it's connecting to 5,000 women or an older generation that misses classic rock, we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
So it's been so just refreshing. And that move, I just feel like was what I personally needed.
Veering off to a different topic, because I'm fascinated to hear your point of view of this. So I ask all the artists that I interview this, and it's interesting to hear all the responses. So
yeah.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for the hard work that you do.
Yeah.
I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the booklet, listening from song one to whatever number. Because I understand in creating that, there's a specific choice and way that you guys do it. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are on a massive comeback. Vinyls last year in the UK alone, 5.9 million sales, the biggest since 1990. Wow. And in the UK, I'm using these stats. I'm not sure about the States, but it's what I've had available. There's a basket of products that they use in the UK to gauge income tax. Vinyls have been in that basket for the longest period of time. And because of the upsurge of CD purchases again, that product is now in the basket for them to gauge income tax because so many people are buying CDs again. But now we've also got these. Yeah, absolutely. I'm like so excited because I'm like, I love my CDs. But now we've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of where the landscape is at the moment?
I definitely feel the comeback, and we've started a big campaign and push in the European territories. And the first thing that my team and I were talking about is they were like, we need CDs and vinyl. And I was like, praise the Lord. Like, this is like what we as artists, I'm like, wait, people are going to listen on the way they're supposed to be listening.
Exactly.
Like, we're going to have this resurgence again. Like, it's music to my ear, so to speak. And it's like, I'm so excited even for down to like the unveiling, the packaging, like the lyrics, the photos, what I love. And I feel like, you know, a lot of us are like, you and I are probably like the last of the dying breed where we're like, but maybe not, maybe it's like happening. Is like when we open it, I'm immediately like, okay, this is their world. This is what they were doing in real time on this record. Like, and I can see it and I can feel it and I feel the energy. And I love, like, I love taking out that vinyl. I like hearing that fucking hiss in the sound.
Yes.
And everything just sounds, you know, Eshe and I talk a lot about it. It's like, it sounds warmer. It sounds like a warm hug.
Exactly. Feels and like I you're in a stadium sort of compared to the digital. Yeah.
It's just, it's glorious. And so I love that my team told me that. I 100% agree with you. I think it's sparking right now. There's a spark. And I think it's also a big part for the artists, a lot of the artists to also be like, which I'm seeing a lot of, hey, here's my merch. And part of the merch they're selling is like, it's vinyl and CDs. So cool.
But also what this research, I've been reading up a lot on it, and the research is showing that it's not the older, nostalgic people buying it. It's actually the teenagers and the early 20s that are diving into it, which is awesome because it means that it will keep growing.
It's so cool. So when I did that tour with George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, I remember making a run of vinyl on one of the first record. And I remember, I couldn't believe it, but I was like, I had the young college kids being like, can you sign the vinyl? Can you sign the vinyl? And I was like, well, this is sick. Like, okay, they get it. But it was so cool to see. It was like, we were selling out of vinyl and like, not the hats. So I was like, okay. So it was really, it was like, and that was happening 4 years ago. So I can only imagine now when I go back out on the road to have that physical product. Yeah. And even my team was saying, when you're being played on radio and stuff, like, we want to send these promoters CDs.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And vinyl. They still want it.
Yeah.
They still want it. Yes. They want to have the physical product and they want to see your design. And I'm like, I fucking love that.
So I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this game, this question in 2 minutes, 5 years, 20 years, I know your answer will be different every time. Simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. Just the first five that come to mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists, once we finish this conversation, what would those songs be and by whom?
Oh my goodness. Okay. Summertime, Janis Joplin. First, I'm going to go B.B. King, The Thrill Is Gone as well. I'm going to say Puccini's opera La Boheme. There's a middle section, Mimi's song. Led Zeppelin, Ramble On. Heart, Barracuda, because I'm just in there right now.
Yeah, yeah. But that's
don't
cool.
judge me. Fuck, that's
why if I literally had to ask you this question again now, you would have another five. That's why I love this game. So it's super cool. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say to the guys?
I'll be posting away on Instagram. Come follow me and dive into the Velvet world and see the love and expression of what I'm doing with my art. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.